time for Wednesday's hour number two on Hashtag Daily K with your host, Peter Bint. Korean dramas, movies, and even lyrics. Why is the world paying attention to Korean stories?
From classics to modern masterpieces, time to dig deep into the charms of Korean literature.
On Check It Out!
With Paul.
It is the 10th of April. It is the lead up to Paul Matthew's birthday. I think you remember I promised I would buy you something.
You did promise.
No. Let me rephrase that. I promised I would get you a present.
No, you promised you'd buy me a present. You used the words buy, B-U-Y.
I need to re-listen to that, but okay.
I re-listened to it this morning before the show.
I can still make the case that I have bought you a present because your birthday is coming up and it is not yet passed. I am a taxpayer here in Korea.
Are you? What? How much tax did you pay last year?
Not much, but I still do pay taxes. And
right.
So, as Arirang is this foundation that some of it comes from government funds.
Yeah, isn't it a private organisation now?
It's a jaedan, which means actually it got a huge amount of money in the beginning, and we're just kind of living off of that.
So it's not the money that you pay because you didn't used to pay tax in Korea.
Yeah, I think maybe
so that's
when
my tax because I've been here for 24 years.
When my mum was living here, you know, in her 20s and 30s, she paid some tax.
Arirang wasn't open back
but
then.
But that money must have gained.
No,
some
it got used. It got used on the other broadcasting stations.
Do you want your present or not?
Well,
Paul,
I want a bought
Matthews.
Present.
Yes, so I paid for this paper somehow, some way.
No, you didn't.
And in fact, my blood, sweat, and tears went into the translation. So I am giving you a signed, one-of-a-kind, April 10th
okay, you
opening
can't show this,
daily
no, you,
K script.
You actually cannot show this to the camera.
Why not?
Because you've done it in blue ink.
Oh, my goodness. I broke the rules of voting day, which... Yeah, it gives us the opportunity to peek behind the curtain. Our producer, Minnie, did say,
yeah.
Do not wear red or blue today because those represent the two parties.
And what did Peter do?
I wore red and blue.
And green and yellow.
So vote for anyone. And orange as well. Whoever
is there
you
an
like.
Orange party?
Don't you push away my signed script birthday. It says happy B-Day. It doesn't say Paul, but it's got my
you
signature.
You spelt it B-I-D-E-T.
It's got a little smiley face as well. I'm putting that at the back of your script. You're very unappreciative.
Peter told me off air that the real present is actually waiting for me after the show, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, you get to choose one of my children to take home because they will be here at the end.
I'm not having either. They both stink.
You can wash them. Well, no, probably you can't. That will get you in a lot of trouble. Today's hashtag, we are talking about Dojang stamp. Yeah. What kind of crazy, silly Ajay gag, dad joke do you have lined up for this?
It's what Homer Simpson uses to sign his contracts. Dojang!
Oh, my goodness. I need to watch an episode of The Simpsons. Do you still watch that?
Occasionally. It's gone off the boil a bit.
Really? It's been around for a fair few years.
I have something about Dojang, actually. Seriously.
Okay.
I really need to get myself a Dojang and register it. Because as a freelancer, I don't know about you, I sign a lot of contracts.
Oh, yeah. It's
and
a pain
if you
in the
sign
bottom.
Them online, you know, nowadays you can do it online, little scribble, it's done.
Yeah.
But if you sign it in person... You have to sign contracts side by side on each page, and then you have to turn each page of the contract, fold it in half, and then sign on the next page as well.
I've not seen that in other countries yet.
No, and it's a whole process. And if you've got a stamp, it takes you just, you know, a couple of seconds. If you do it by pen, I've ripped holes in contracts doing it.
That's the problem, because when you fold it over and you have to sign, if your signature like mine doesn't all go in one direction, like it comes back on itself.
No, going
back
in your name.
Over, the fold, it often creases it even more. You guys might not know what we're talking about. I think I've mentioned it on the show once
before.
You were
talking about Dojangs, aren't you? You should explain this in the first hour.
So a stamp is much more appropriate because you just put that over the crease, bang, it's done. You should get
I mean,
one.
A 20p stamp, a 50p stamp, a £1 stamp, first class, second class, doesn't matter.
You could just stick Queen Elizabeth, or it must be King Charles now, I assume, on stamps, is it?
I haven't seen a stamp in a very long time.
Yeah, you could just stick those willy-nilly here, there, and everywhere. Today, Crash asks, does Korea have mail-in voting available to everyone? I'm not sure if it's available to everyone.
Certainly early voting is a big thing here. Yeah. Lots of people were voting over the weekend.
Yeah.
Overseas voting, we had the highest ever, I think, since overseas voting started in 2012.
And for the early voting, it was the highest rates ever.
Yeah.
So who knows? We might get record turnouts. And you said the restrictions on what to wear and personal items seems arduous. There is not a restriction on wearing a colour when you vote. That was just our producer saying for today's show, maybe avoid blue and red.
Generally speaking, when it comes to media, on voting day especially, we need to be impartial. So I think Peter and I are just, because this is not a political program anyway. Yep. We're not talking about politics. And I urge everyone to vote.
Yes.
Whoever you want to vote for, it's up to you.
Of course.
But yeah, so I'm voting for the cat party today. I've got a little cat on my shirt.
Meow. But there is no restriction on what you wear, as far as I'm aware. For voting in Korea, like they're not going
to toss you out. There's one vegetable you can't bring to voting booths today, but we won't talk about it.
Vegetable, interesting. I'm going to talk about that with you in the song break.
Yeah,
I need
now.
To know more.
Yeah.
What are we doing for today's book?
We're doing a book which is not political. Nothing politics. It's a bit busy election day, so I wanted to bring something different, a classic story, a bit of peace and reflection. And I've gone back to a short story that we featured before.
Okay.
I think it was at the start of last year to induce another story from that book. So the book is called Sweet Potato. It's written by Kim Tong-in, translated by Grace Chung. And we looked at the sweet potato story last time, Gamja, a very famous story in Korea.
Okay.
And today we're looking at another story from the book. It's called Boat Song, A Brother's Lament.
Oh.
It was written back in 1921, and it takes us to this meeting of two strangers, two men, one of whom has a tale to tell about his life, his wife, and his brother.
Interesting. I do remember sweet potato kamja, because kamja nowadays just means potato.
Yeah, but back in the old days, it could be either.
Yeah, which is interesting. I guess in English as well, potato, potato, you know.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Okay. The author, Kim Tong-in.
Yes, sometimes spelt T-O-N-G-I-N, or sometimes D-O-N-G-I-N, was born in what is now North Korea, Pyongyang, in 1900. Came from a wealthy family, and so got to study in Tokyo and, you know, had a good education, but then decided to drop out. He was a bit of a rebel.
Okay.
And at 19, he set up a journal called Changjo with his peers. And they wanted to make art. They wanted to write interesting things. And so he started publishing stories. And he was sort of at the forefront of realist fiction in Korea.
Oh, wow. Back in those days.
But he was a young man, and he spent his money on drugs and other things. And so he wasn't too successful. And so eventually he started writing popular stuff, like potboilers and cereals, to make the money.
Okay.
And he died in 1951, but left behind some really, really interesting stories, some really good work. And the Dong-in Literary Award is actually named after him, the award that's given every year.
We've talked about many of the authors winning that before, I think.
Actually, can we just take a moment to recognize Hwang Seok-yong as well, and Sora Kim Russell and her co-translator for being shortlisted for the International Booker Prize.
Oh, wow.
That came out yesterday. Big news.
I did
news.
Not see that news.
Yeah.
Amazing. Congratulations. Fingers crossed, right, to get the award. Translator Grace Jung rings a bell, the name?
Well, because she was the one who translated Sweet Potato last time.
There we go.
Yeah, featuring her collection again. She's actually born here in Korea, in Busan, in 1987, but moved to New York as a kid. Studied English literature, and she's not just a translator, she's also an academic. She directs, she produces, she's a writer herself, does all sorts of things. And this was her first collection of translated work, so it's great to feature another story from it.
Fabulous. So, a short story picking up from the very beginning?
From the very beginning. Fine weather we're having. The kind of weather without a single cloud in the sky. It's not an arrogant sky that sneers, looking down at us little people who shouldn't dare look up at it. It's the kind of sky that appreciates us. It's the kind of sky that seems to want to come down and hold us by the wrists with its lumpy pink clouds. It's a sky of love. I don't stop for even a moment. I tumble around inside the bank of Moran Hill, which is headed for the Taedong River that eventually pours into the Yellow Sea. It's the 3rd of March, the first day of the boat festival on the Taedong River. The blue boats glide over the dark water, where the current sparkles. A colourful melody drunk on the season's fragrance comes drifting over, shaking the spring air softer than velvet. Chosun court music, sung by Gisengs, fits over in a heartbreaking manner, long, slow, soft and flowing. The dark spring water flows through the Taedong River as if it's determined not to stop until it harmonizes with all the love of spring. The green shoots sprout from the Chungnyu wall. The fired-up blood streams inside the human heart. The humid spring air leaves nothing untouched. Spring is here. Spring has come. I hear music that starts out small, gently moving through threads of breeze in the dark Chosun pine and brushing past the freshly risen grass. It contains a beauty that can't be heard any other time. Ah, the intoxicating beauty of green spring. I live in Tongyeong since age 14, so I never enjoyed the season like this. It's impossible for me not to have a greater impression than the others. Within the Pyongyang fortress are greens that just barely sprout through the ground. Tossing the dirt aside, and new buds appear on the willow trees. It's not completely spring yet, but here in the entire vicinity of Moran Hill, up past the Taedong River to the rich forest reminiscent of the Canaan earth, spring and all its affections have arrived. And the tall wheat and barley are decorated green. A farmer who looks out at the field with a smile is a sight I can imagine without seeing. The clouds seem to shoot through the sky. The shadows cast by the cloud right below it moves to the other side, and there it spreads out as if it will create a new green world. Wherever the wind blows, just a bit, the wheat falls then rises again like water currents. It dances like this whenever the day clears. The black kites praise the lull of spring, drawing a circle high up in the sky, heightening the beautiful spring's intoxicating scent.
So we just got a whole big description there.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like we've got going with the story itself, just like the background of spring.
Sometimes part of the story is the description, it's the setting of the place.
It's very detailed for a short story. This is a short story.
Yeah. Ooh. But, you know, that's what people like to do sometimes.
All right, it's painted a picture. I get it. It's
the Pyongyang hill, used to be a really beautiful place.
Moran Hill, the river, the boat festival. I don't think we have a boat festival like that anymore, if I'm not mistaken.
Not on the 3rd of March.
We don't have Kisengs singing out music as well, do we?
Not in public.
No. So it seems quite a positive start to everything.
It is. He's having a fine old time and he's walking around and he hears someone singing. He's by or nearby Gija's tomb.
Mm-hmm.
And he hears this sad song from Yongnyu called the Petaragi.
Okay.
Have you heard of the Petaragi?
No, but that sounds like the boat song that we're talking about.
Exactly. So the literal meaning is following the boat, and it's a traditional lament of an unlucky fisherman who was the only survivor during a storm when his boat capsized.
Okay.
And the narrator knows it. He's spent time in Yongnyu. So he's like, I know this song. And the singer's really, really good. Better than the Giseng singing.
Oh.
And he's listening to it and he's enchanted. And he's like, I have to see who's singing this. I'm going to find him.
Just got to follow the voice, I
exactly.
assume.
And so that's what he does. He searches. He's walking through this pine grove. And at the center, at Kija's tomb, he finds the singer.
Oh.
It's an older man who stops when he spots him. It's like, you know, he was just singing for himself.
Okay, that's quite a normal reaction.
Yeah, and they start to chat, you know, and it's all going well. And it turns out the man does actually come from where the song comes from. He comes from Yongnyu.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's maybe why he can sing it with soul.
Yeah, but I think there may be other reasons.
Oh.
He also explains he hasn't been back there for 20 years.
Ooh.
And the narrator's like, you know, this is a nice day. It's spring. I'm in the mood for a story in nature. And so he asks him, well, tell me why. Why haven't you been back home for 20 years? And the man obliges.
Let's hear the story ourselves.
The place he lived in was a small fishing town facing the ocean, located about 20 li away from Yongnyu province. He was fairly well known in that tiny village, about 30 houses total. His parents passed away when he was 14. The only family he had left were his wife, his younger brother and sister-in-law, who lived next door. The two brothers were the wealthiest in that village and caught the most fish. They were not only literate, but also sang the petaragi very well. In other words, the two brothers were the village's finest. It was mid-August and the Chuseok holiday. On the 11th of August, he headed to the market to purchase groceries for the holiday and a mirror for his wife. "One that's bigger than the one at Dangsun's house, don't forget, okay?" His wife emphasized this to him as she followed him out into the street. "I won't forget," he said, as he faced the red sunlight and headed out of his village. He, this is a bit funny, adored his wife. She was a rare beauty for a country girl, and quite affectionate, so he told me. It's hard to come across a girl like her in Pyongyang, even in the red light district. So for a country couple, they were quite close, to the point of looking funny to onlookers. The elders around him always told him never to fall for the looks and charms of a woman. The couple had a good relationship. Because of their good relationship, he had a tendency to be overly jealous. And his wife was constantly subject to his jealousy. It wasn't that she behaved poorly. She was incredibly naive and very bubbly, causing her to start up a conversation with just about anyone with her charm. Whenever there was a holiday, all the town's young men flocked over to that house, claiming it was the most pure. The young folks called his wife Mrs., and she called them back Mr., while laughing and enjoying their little game. Whenever they did, he'd sit in a corner and watch from the corner of his eye. After the young men left, he'd attack his wife, interrogating her behavior. Whenever a fight erupted, his younger brother and sister-in-law would come running over to stop it, and the boatman would give his brother a beating too. He had a reason for treating the younger brother this way. His younger brother had a courageous dignity about him, and even though he'd been hit by the saltwater winds, his face was still white. Perhaps this could have been enough to make the boatman jealous, but seeing his wife be good to his brother was a sight he could not stand. It was about 6 months before he left Yongye. It was also 6 months from when he left for the market, his birthday. He ate good meals at home, but he had a strange habit of saving good food for later. His wife was well aware of this habit of his, and yet when his brother came over around lunchtime, she attempted to offer him the food that her husband had saved earlier. When he glared at her angrily, communicating, "No, don't give it to him," she didn't take notice and gave the meal to his brother anyhow. He felt a great discomfort inside. He promised himself internally, "As soon as this woman gives me a reason, well, I'll..." His wife prepared the meal for his brother, then walked away. On her way over, she lightly stepped on her husband's foot by accident.
Oh, you can feel the tension between this man and wife.
Yeah, happy and yet not happy because of his jealousy.
Yeah, he seems very jealous. She seems a little bit too naive as well, to be honest. And then that doesn't seem like an accidental step on a foot to me.
Well, I think it was an accidental step.
What happens, though? Does he explode on that?
Well, he uses it as an excuse to call her all sorts of names that I cannot repeat on IDN radio and beats her.
Oh, no.
And his brother comes in to break up the fight, and the man is like, you know, "Wife, get out of here. Get out. Leave." Okay. You know, she says, "No, this is my house. I live here." So he leaves.
Good.
Instead.
She's got some chutzpah.
Chutzpah is the pronunciation. Yep. So he goes to a bar, gets drunk. Then he realizes he has to go home, so he buys some rice cakes as a peace offering, goes back, and things are normal again for a few more months.
Okay.
Thing is, his brother, despite being married, seems to be having an affair with a woman in another village.
Well, that's not good as well.
And what's interesting is his wife, not the brother's wife, is really upset about it, even blaming the man for not stopping his brother from going.
So is she jealous?
Well, they have another argument. This time she storms out, goes to his brother's house, and he's on the verge of picking up a knife and going and doing what for to them.
This is taking a turn.
Yeah, but his wife returns, they make up. And at this point, the narrator's saying, you know, it's a love triangle. And we got a feeling, it's one that's going to end badly. And it does, because the man catches his brother and his wife in his house with their clothes all disheveled, you know, not wearing them properly.
Uh-oh.
And they sort of look at him panicked and say, "Oh, we were trying to catch a mouse."
Well, that's a rubbish excuse.
Yeah, and so he attacks his brother, kicks him out of the house, does the same to his wife.
Uh-oh.
Couple of hours pass. He's sort of, you know, coming down from that high of anger.
Yeah.
Starts tidying things up and discovers a mouse hiding under some clothes.
Oh.
And in his head he's thinking, there was a mouse. There was a mouse?
Uh-oh.
And he plays out in his head what may have really happened, that there was actually a mouse and that they were really just trying to catch the mouse and maybe, yeah, their clothes got dislodged in a little way here and there.
Okay.
And he waits for his wife to come home.
Okay.
But his wife doesn't come home.
Oh, no. Did she run off with the brother? Were they actually having an affair?
Well, he goes to look for her. And he goes to the town. She's not in town. Yeah. And then he starts wandering along the shore. And that's where he finds her.
Oh, good.
Dead.
No, not
drowned.
Good. They're not so good. Oh, no. Deliberately?
No, I think she's... Maybe she's walked into the water. She's had too much.
Uh-oh.
So there's a funeral, a simple funeral, and the brother leaves town afterwards. And so the man is like, I need to go and talk to my brother. I need to find him.
Okay.
And so he starts this chase, this going from place to place, never quite catching up with him, never finding him. And 10 years fly by.
Oh, my
doing
goodness.
This. He's going from boat to boat. One night, the boat he's on is caught in a storm. He's thrown into the water. He loses consciousness. He almost drowns, but he somehow makes it.
Okay.
And when he opens his eyes, it's night. He's on the shore. There's a fire burning nearby, helping to dry him out.
Okay.
And his brother is looking into his face.
Oh.
And they have a brief conversation, and then he falls asleep. He loses consciousness. And when he wakes again, his brother is gone, and the people say, oh, yeah, he was here for a while, and then he went.
What a mystery.
Yeah. And so he continues to go look for him. And another 10 years have passed. It's been 20 years of looking for his brother.
Wow.
And he doesn't know if he's alive or dead. He heard things. Oh, he went off to Incheon. He went down to here. And so he's always kept following, but never caught up with him.
Mm.
And that's his story. And at the end of his story, the narrator asks him a question. And that's where our third and final reading will pick up. Where will you go now? Don't know that either. Do we have a fixed destination? I'm going to wander whichever way the wind pushes me. He sings the Petaragi for me once more. A remorse locked inside that song that can't be tended to. A painful longing for the ocean. After the song ends, he stands up and turns. Soaking in the red evening sun on his back, he walks towards Urmil Pavilion. I don't have the strength to stop him, so I simply stare at his back and sit in place. I return home that night, but that Petaragi and that fatalist story keeps ringing inside my ears. I can't sleep. The next morning when I wake up, I don't even eat breakfast. I run over to Kija's tomb to search for him. The grass he's been sitting on appears flattened, commemorating his last trip, but he himself is nowhere in sight. But the Petaragi rings over from some place as though to shake every pine tree. It's from Moran Hill. He's on Moran Hill, I say. Then rush over, but there is no one there. He's not at Pubyongnu either. Ulmil Pavilion. That's where he must be. I rush back to Ulmil Pavilion. From Ulmil Pavilion to Pubyongnu, perhaps even to hell, is a thicket of pine groves connecting them together. The Petaragi could be heard there, as if to shake every pine needle in the forest, but he can't be found. The millions of pine needles stretch out towards the sky on Kija's tomb. The millions of grass blades, they all sing the sad Petaragi. But I can't find him anywhere on Moran Hill. When I go to the river and inquire on his whereabouts, I'm told that he left at the crack of dawn on the morning boat. Summer and autumn go by, and a year passes. Spring returns. That man left behind a fateful story in a Petaragi, but he himself does not return to Moran Hill. Spring has returned to Moran Hill and Kija's tomb. The broken grass that he sat on has sprung back to life, and orange flowers appear to be blooming, but the man who sang the Petaragi cannot be found. All that can be found are the pine needles whispering, as if to cherish the memory of the Petaragi that he left behind.
That's a nice, simple intricate tale at the same time, with lots of love and loss and whatnot condensed. Josh says, did the brother leave for him to perhaps chase, or did he leave because he didn't want to face and explain the situation with the wife? That's no, one thing I'm kind of left scratching my head about.
In my opinion, and I could well be wrong, I think the brother, I think maybe there was nothing between the brother and the wife. I think maybe they were very good friends. Maybe they were close. Maybe they were thinking of, you know, fantasizing, but nothing happened. And it's because of the man that the wife dies. And the brother, he can't stand to be there. Can't stand to live that life now that he's been witness to that death.
And that is a sad, life-changing event. So this
it's
is
like
the...
when someone doesn't get you an early birthday present, even though you've known each other for over a decade.
That is true. And you know,
Lisa Kelly would have got me something.
Across those decades, I don't think I've ever received an early birthday present from you, Paul, have I? I don't think once, so, is he gone, never to be seen again? Is this the end of the story?
This is it. And the question that we have to ask now is the narrator going to be searching for him? Is he going to choose to search for all eternity, or is he going to sit amongst the flowers?
Yeah, it's like he's now left with a choice, isn't he?
Yeah, it's almost like the curse has been passed on, which in a very beautiful way. Mm-hmm. I find it sad, I find it philosophical, I find it beautiful. It made me think for a long time.
Yeah,
made me think about, I think a lot of us, maybe not all of us, but I think most of us spend parts of our lives searching for something that can never be found. So, for example, maybe it's that happy day we had in childhood.
Okay.
Or maybe it's that feeling of first love. Or maybe it's that first bite of, you know, freshly made kimchi that just tasted like heaven when your mother made it. And you can never get it back.
Yeah. It's that journey of searching, maybe, that can be important and meaningful.
Sure, but at the same time, it can be damaging. I think if we get too obsessed with the thing that we cannot have, and we crave it too much, we can actually isolate ourselves and we can actually damage our relationship with others. And that's what has happened here. Yeah. And it's the worry that this might happen to the narrator. And I'll be honest, there's another reason why I brought this story, because, yes, my birthday's coming up, but... But next Tuesday is a very important day in Korea.
Oh.
I don't know if you're aware. You know what it is, but the next Tuesday will be the 10th anniversary of the Sewol ferry disaster.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, it is that time, isn't it?
It's been a decade, and it's hard to believe it's already been 10 years.
2014.
Because it's still so raw and painful for many people. For those who don't know, for those who maybe had not made a Korea connection back in 2014, There was a ferry, and it was traveling from Incheon to Jeju, and suddenly it started to sink, and it was carrying hundreds of high school students. They were going on their school trip. It was meant to be a wonderful time. And we basically, as a country, watched aghast in real time as some got out, some were rescued, but many died. The ship sank into the ocean, and we lost many, many lives.
Yeah, and that was... on the news, wasn't it? Broadcasting live.
Yeah, and for years afterwards, this became a really important thing in Korea. It changed Korea as a country. We'll never be the same again, I think. Mm-hmm. A bit like the old man in the story after the death of his wife.
Yeah.
He could never be the same person. Forever singing that mournful song, and you're wishing for the past to change, wishing for your loved one to come back to life. You can't find the thing you're looking for because it's not there anymore.
Yeah, and you just maybe spend the rest of the years just wandering aimlessly, perhaps.
So all I'd ask our listeners, I'm sorry to end it on a bit of a downer, is that on Tuesday, maybe wear yellow or put on a yellow ribbon and remember those kids who were lost 10 years ago, because their families are still here and the families are still suffering. There was a documentary that came out recently that was talking about, you know, the families and how they are now, because they're like this old man, is that they're looking for answers that will, I think, never come. And I don't think we'll ever look at boats in the same way again in Korea, at least not for our lifetime.
It's a real sensitive spot for parents as well. As you know, COVID came along and not many kids have been going on school trips, just full stop. But now that we're out of that, there's a lot of talk at our son's school about maybe going on a trip, maybe one night, 2 days.
Yeah.
And even if it doesn't involve a boat, parents are still now really kind of reticent about maybe sending their kids away just in case. You know, the chances are very minute that anything will happen. But because this...
I think there are these moments of collective trauma in every country where that really impacts on two or three generations.
Absolutely, yeah. Linking it to that, I didn't see that, but there is definitely a link in that story. Paul, as ever, thank you so much for coming in, especially on a red day as well, where, you know, you could have just swanned it up at a cafe.
I'm happy to come in on a red day, a blue day, a green day, a yellow day, any day you like.
We are going to have you back next Monday because next week's schedule is a little bit topsy-turvy. We're going to have Peter's on the Block on Wednesday.
Do you not want my one-line review?
Yeah, as a third and final birthday present, give us your one-line review, Paul.
A sad tale of how jealousy can ruin everything and how we can spend our lives searching for the thing that can never be found.
Deep and meaningful indeedy. Next week's book?
Next week I'm excited because it is my birthday on Friday. Okay. So I'm going to give myself a belated birthday present. This is a short story I've been looking forward to a long time. I was saving it up for the right occasion. It's a bit of a sci-fi, weirdy, beardy story.
Oh,
and
nice.
I love it. It's called Take My Voice. It's by Serang Chung. It's translated by Anton Herr. It's a chat book, one of these exclusive series we featured on the show before. So if you have read it, get in touch. Let us know what you think.
We, going along the lines of yellow and your birthday...
Can I say thank you to everyone first?
All right. I didn't want to give you four presents. I think you're being a bit greedy, but
also
hey,
to
right,
the Literature Translation Institute of Korea for help with copyright permission.
Yep.
Thanks to Kim Tong-in for his beautiful story and to Grace Chung for her translation.
Yep. Yep.
I'll be back next week with another book.
Well,
bye.
You can listen to Check It Out with Paul Matthews on Arirang Radio's hashtag Daily K every Wednesday from 10 a.m. KST.